Welcome to Innovation. I'm Kara Hetland, and joining me now in the Kirby Family Studio is Terry Sewell. He's a research physical scientist with Eros Data Center. Terry, thanks for coming in today.
No, thank you for having me.
So what we're going to talk about today is a project called 4C. It's a land use model program, but I have to say that it really stands for Forecasting Scenarios of Land Use Change, but you spell it out as 4C, right?
Yeah.
It's very clever because you're looking ahead.
A lot of thought went into the naming of that model.
So let's talk, explain what it really is.
Well, we come from USGS Eros, and we're the world's largest repository of remote sensing imagery. So satellite imagery, aerial photography, other data sets that monitor the Earth's surface. One of the things that we've historically done is map land use, what's on the Earth's surface. Is it agriculture? Is it cropland? Is it wetland? Is it water? The Landsat Archive is very extensive. It's the world's longest continuous, consistent monitoring data set, but it only goes back to 72, and obviously it stops with the present day. And so what we're trying to do with our model is to take those data and to extend them both back in time and both forward in time for dates when remote sensing data like Landsat are not available.
Okay, and this is what you do all day long. Is you have a favorite area of the Earth that you like to study and watch and monitor?
Well, we are USGS, so most of the work that we do is the conterminous U.S. We've mapped the entire U.S. It's a wonderful job. We've got to see the entire country, all 50
and
states.
And you never have to leave your chair.
And you never have to leave the chair, no. You can see a lot from a satellite image. So.
Tell me, what do you really see?
Well, from our perspective, we're trying to capture what's going to happen in the future. And so we have partners, be it people that are interested in animal life, in hydrology, in climate and weather. And what we're trying to do is inform them to be able to anticipate what might happen in the future and hopefully mitigate any negative consequences. And so from the satellite imagery, you know, we can capture, you know, things like deforestation and forest cutting. We can capture new urban areas that are going in. We can capture in South Dakota the massive amount of agricultural change that's occurred in the last 10 years. In the last 10 years, we've had more conversion of grassland to cropland than we've had in decades. And that's something that we can capture. And from a modeling perspective, what we're trying to do is provide realistic scenarios, what-if situations, so that if I am somebody that's modeling a bird species and what might happen to it in the future, I can look at multiple options and hopefully help to manage that species better.
And so you also can incorporate other data from other researchers as well?
Yeah, and one of the challenges with land cover modeling is there's so many things that impact how people use the landscape, be it economics or politics or you know, just people's individual motivations. And you really can't do it on your own. You need partners. So when we do work with climate and weather, we bring in the climate and weather experts. When we work with birds, you know, I have partnerships with Audubon and other groups. So we really try to make it a collaborative effort more than just Eros doing the work on our own.
And then what happens to your work after you say, okay, here's our prediction?
I can give you a few examples. So In South Dakota, we've had multiple people up at South Dakota State that have used the data for looking at things like water flow and water quality in the Skunk River Basin or in the Big Sioux River Basin. From a bird perspective, we ourselves at Eros have done work looking at how both climate change and landscape change in the future might impact bird species. And that has impacts beyond just the birds. It has economic impacts. And one example I'll give is, you know, we modeled a species, the sharp-tailed grouse, which is a popular hunting bird in South Dakota. They do have thermal limits. They can't take the heat very well. And so they have a limit right now that goes down to about the Platte River in Nebraska. We modeled out to 2075, and the combination of land use change and climate change in the future is such that it's likely that sharp-tailed grouse will be extirpated from the southern two-thirds of South Dakota by 2075. So it goes beyond a hypothetical type of assessment into things that really have impacts on farmers in the region, on hunters, and other people with economic interests.
But what can we really do to change it? If you say it's coming, what can you really do to stop it from happening?
That is the challenge. it's one thing to say this is likely what's going to happen, and as we've seen in recent years, it's another to try to get people to pay attention.
But it seems like that's the easy part, is to say this is what we see is going to happen.
It is, and making it, turning it into actionable science is a challenge. It's a challenge to communicate what we do to policymakers, to the public in general. And so that's one of the reasons that we like to do public outreach, including opportunities like this, to be able to convey to the public that the work that we do at USGS Aeros isn't just scientists sitting in a box doing things that don't have a lot of relevance to their everyday lives. You know, it really does. And from a perspective of climate and weather, or from an agricultural perspective, and what a farmer is going to be able to grow in the coming years. One of the things that we tie into quite heavily and are working on improving is water availability and climate. So from a climate perspective, are we going to be able to grow the same crops that we grow in South Dakota right now? And I think the challenge for us is to make it relevant to the people on the ground. And so one of the things is that we try to do with these partnerships, particularly as we bring in economic interests in our partnerships, is try to show that relevancy, to try to show people that, this is more than just a science exercise. It's something that could directly impact your livelihood and your kids' livelihood in the future.
And are you at all, pheasant population has been very much in the news this year, and I'm just wondering if that's something you've been able to see, habitat and that kind of thing as well.
Yeah, and habitat is key. There are many factors that can impact things like pheasant populations. That's not a species that we've modeled, say that. But habitat overall is the biggest predictor of bird species distributions and bird populations. And that's something that we can model very well.
And that's something you said already, that you've already seen more land under production than in grasslands.
In the last 10 years, we've had rates of grassland conversion to cropland in South Dakota that rival and surpass the rates of tropical deforestation. And you have the news that talks about climate change and what's happening in South America and elsewhere with regard to deforestation. Right here at home, we have rates of land cover change that are unprecedented in recent decades. And that's something that we've been working on to both map, monitor, and predict to what may happen in the future.
Where are your predictions taking you?
One of the things that is nice about being a land cover modeler is that you can never be wrong, and that the future is very uncertain. And one of the challenges is, because there are so many factors that impact land use, that we try to do multiple scenarios. And so we're not weather forecasters. We're not saying this is what's going to happen by 2050. What we'll do is we'll provide multiple options. We'll say, well, if we keep the current path that we're on, if we keep the current political situation, if we keep the current policies, the current climate, this is what's going to happen. And then we provide alternatives off of that business as usual scenario, if you will, so that we can explore multiple futures.
Can there be policy changes made to change what you foresee?
There can be. USGS is, by its nature, we don't delve into the politics. We are a science agency, so I don't want to talk too much about that. But yeah, definitely. And what we're trying to do is not guide policy or not provide policy ourselves, but provide the information to the policymakers and the politicians so that they can make the best decision on how to manage the landscape.
Now, you talked a little bit earlier that, you also look at pollinators and bees, and I know that that's a big thing. Tell me a little bit about what you see there.
Okay. We have a project with University of North Dakota, and it's pollinators is kind of a group of a larger set of services that are provided by the landscape, and we call these ecosystem services. And these are things that provide recreational opportunity, economic opportunity, but the University of North Dakota is very interested in pollinators, and they have a wonderful database that goes back in time, looks at the landscape at a regional level around where people have raised bees in the past, what the honey production was in the past, and what the land use and climate were in the past. What we can do is take that information, extrapolate it out in the future to try to get a better idea of pollinator success, perhaps honey production. And you know, these are things that, again, they have a big economic impact. Pollinators are directly responsible for, you know, a lot of the agricultural products that we have. And without the pollinators and an understanding of what might happen to them in the future, you know, we're not going to do a very good job of managing them.
Talk a little bit about some other projects that you are working on as well.
Okay, yeah, I'll give you an example of one that's been sitting on the back burner for a while, but is very interesting to me. We were contacted by EPA and the city of Minneapolis. In central Minnesota, a lot of forest land recently has been sold to a private company, Offutt, who is the U.S. largest producer of potatoes. And it's usually potatoes for fast food fries and things like that. Well, what they found is that the sandy forested soil in central Minnesota is very suitable for potatoes. You can't do a lot of other agricultural work there. So they bought a lot of land and they converted a lot of forest to potatoes. Well, that's about 200 miles north of the Twin Cities. However, a couple of years after they started to do these land cover conversions, the water quality people in Minneapolis found that for the first time ever, they were finding pollutants in the water that they've never had to deal with before. One of these are cyanotoxins. So these are produced by a blue-green algae that wasn't present in the Mississippi River in Minneapolis prior to that land use conversion. Well, the reason for it is that the land use conversion uses a lot of phosphorus, a lot of nitrogen for fertilizer. That gets into the river, that feeds the blue-green algae, that creates cyanotoxin. And for the first time ever, Minneapolis had water quality issues because of what was happening 200 miles north to them. And so we had a project with EPA and the city of Minneapolis to look at land cover change in central Minnesota. Was it going to continue? And what the water quality impacts may be. And then we were working with the water treatment people in the city of Minneapolis to see what kind of equipment they might need in the future to potentially mitigate those negative consequences.
Because these are just images that you're saying, here is what is happening. I mean, people can't really question your data, can they?
They can definitely question.
Okay, they do.
You know, it's a different world in what I do and that what most of Eros does, because most of what Eros does is mapping what's on the landscape. And there we can quantify it. You know, we can look at field work, or we can look at higher resolution data to try to quantify and provide a indication of the quality of that information. And again, because the future is uncertain, you really can't do that. And this, again, goes back to the idea of having to use scenarios to try to provide multiple futures. So we're not saying that the data are perfect, but we're saying somewhere within this realm of potential outcomes, this is what's likely to happen.
Okay. So. Terry Sewell, I want to thank you very much for taking time and coming on the program today. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I really enjoyed it.